Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show was recorded on Saturday, December 27th, for air on December 28th, 2014, the last show of 2014. This is episode 1148. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPhone, iPad, or other Apple product is worth at gazelle.com. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk about technology, computers, the internet, cell phones, home theater, digital photography, and all that jazz as we do here each and every weekend at this time. The last show of 2014, heading into 2015, New Year's Eve coming up. And I, you know, yesterday I kind of, on the last show, did what I often do, which is take a look back at 2014, and then, which is pretty easy, because it already happened. You know, all I have to do is just go back through my notes from the year. But this, today, I do something a little more difficult, which is to look ahead at what 2015 will bring. And I should warn you, I'm almost always wrong. Because one of the things that's so great about technology is the best stuff comes out of left field. You didn't expect it. Who knew that would happen? Mobile phones, you know, really took off in 2007, 7 years ago, 8 years ago, come New Year, and became, I think, in 2014, the device that we spent the most time with online in. Perhaps our number one computer. And I think that, of course, 2015 is going to bring more of that. A lot of people talk about IoT, the Internet of Things, and a number of pundits have said that 2015 will be the Internet of Things. And this is one of the reasons it's so hard to predict. We know that this is going to happen. I think we probably knew that mobile computing and pocket computing and smartphones would be big, but it's always hard to know exactly when that's going to happen. And while I know that, you know, the general trend is that computing power is moving out to the periphery, that making a chip, the components has gotten cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. You can build a full-fledged PC with memory and storage and operating system, a processor, even a graphics processor for about $35 now, something like the Raspberry Pi. So those prices have really tumbled. And that's what is going to make possible the Internet of Things. And, you know, to some degree, we've already seen that with things like the Nest thermostat. This is a smart home thermostat that knows when you're home, knows when you're not. It's on the Internet, so it knows what the weather forecast is. So it knows if you need heat tonight or not. And people have claimed some major energy savings just by having a smart thermostat. And I imagine we'll see some of those things, smart home things emerging, both Apple, Google and Microsoft have all said, we're doing smart home stuff. We're going to finally solve this smart home thing. But we have been waiting for this for more than a decade. The idea that your refrigerator might tell you when you're out of milk, or you know, your dishwasher might say, hey, you might want to run me before you get home, and you can do it before you leave work. Those kinds of things, they're coming for sure. And I think 2015 will make some big steps there. It's hard to say whether it will become the dominant technology. One thing we for sure will see is a continued battle over the internet. And this is something that was big last year in 2014 and will be big this year in 2015, is this attempt on one hand by the commercial interests who provide us with internet access to make more money by charging us and the people who feed us the content, like Netflix, both, versus advocates for open internet, people like you and me who want to use the internet without having to pay through the nose, and even, I guess, government regulation. The Federal Communications Commission has been trying to figure out a way that they can make sure that this internet stays free and open. This year, they'll decide whether they will take up something called Title II regulation, telling the broadband providers that they're common carriers like the phone companies, and they can be regulated by the FCC like the phone companies. A lot of people worry about that, including myself. I'm not sure government getting into its fat mitts into the internet is such a good idea. Government moves too slowly, is too unsophisticated, doesn't really understand, I think in many cases, the real value of the internet. Nobody does in technology in general because it's hard to predict. That's why free and open is so important, because that's when innovation happens. If you start making lanes, fast lanes or slow lanes or government lanes, and channeling innovation and ideas in those lanes, you're not going to get the great stuff. You're going to get the somewhat okay stuff. But the really great stuff happens when there's true open and freedom, openness and freedom. And that's why we want to keep that internet open, for that kind of innovation. So this will be an interesting battle. The Supreme Court's going to take up some interesting cases. They heard arguments in 2014 for a very interesting case about a fella making threats on Facebook. It's a free speech debate. Is it protected speech to go on Facebook and on your wall, not somebody else's wall, but on your wall, say nasty, horrible things, even threatening things, things that would be illegal if you were to write them on a piece of paper and mail them to somebody? The case is a fellow who threatened his ex-wife with some horrific speech, but he did it on his Facebook wall, somewhere where only he and people who followed him could see it. And the Supreme Court is taking this case up. He's in jail right now for this. But his appeal has gone all the way to the Supreme Court, and they accepted it. I think they even heard arguments already. They'll decide sometime in 2015 if that's protected speech. And I worry, because if they think it is, it seems to me that there's going to be problems on the internet with people saying horrifically horrible things on Facebook and elsewhere just because it's not exactly public. It's not exactly private either. Will this be the year, 2015, be the year of the robot? We already have seen Amazon's Echo, which is a little tube that you can talk to that sits in your living room or your kitchen and it'll talk back to you. A company named Jibo will be selling either this year or maybe in 2016, depending on how quickly they produce the Jibo. A little device that does the same, but looks at you, takes pictures, talks back to you. Certainly robotics have made great strides. I don't think we're quite to the HAL 9000 or the Terminator 2000 level, but this could be. One technology I'd love to see improved in 2015 is battery technology. Well, the thing that really holds back our smartphones now and keeps them from being as fast and as beautiful as they deserve to be, as we'd like them to be, is the battery. You know, unfortunately, a lot of smartphones came out this year with super high-res, beautiful displays that kill battery life and keep the phone from lasting all day. A phone has to last all day or it's useless. You gotta work from the moment I unplug you at 6 a.m. to the moment I go to bed at 10 p.m. And if you don't, then it's no good. And a surprisingly large number of today's phones won't get you through that whole day. So I would love, and I expect to see some battery breakthroughs, although there are those who say there aren't going to be any. We're going to have to solve this in some other way. Bigger phones, maybe. Better software, certainly. Related to that, improvements in solar power. Right now, solar cells are very inefficient. 5-10% at best of the sun's energy are captured by those solar cells and turned into electricity. A big breakthrough happened in 2014. Researchers were able to take existing solar cells and double and triple and quadruple their efficiency. That would make a huge difference in not only the efficiency of solar cells, but the economic viability of using solar power. I'd love to see that. Something we need is a renewable energy source. You know, all energy comes from the sun, ultimately. It's a little bit inefficient to turn that sun into chlorophyll, make a plant, grow a plant, have the plant die, have it turn into sludge, bake it for a couple of thousand years or maybe million years and turn it into oil. That's not the most efficient way to use the sun's energy. It'd be nice if we could use it directly. And this would be an amazing, amazing breakthrough. And I hope that this will be the year we see solar, big solar breakthrough. I don't think we'll see phones that are much smarter. I think phones might have hit their peak in 2014. Unless we can get better battery life out of those phones. That's where we really need it. They're certainly powerful enough. They're fast enough. Their screens are gorgeous enough. And they do the job. We look forward, anyway, to some of those improvements. I think it'll be an interesting year. Let's hope so. And I certainly hope it's a more peaceful and more happy year for all of us. We're going to go to the phones, as we always do. Yeah, sure, I'll take calls answer your questions, help you with your technology. As we wind down 2014, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We go to the phones right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello. Last show of 2014. And we've been talking a little bit about what to look forward to in 2014. But I'd love to talk to you, too. And I think Heather Hammond, our phone ranger, has come in expressly to help me put together a list of wonderful callers. I see them all lined up here. Who should I start with?
Yeah, Ryan needed very little work because he's in Maui, so everybody looks good, right?
Everybody looks good in Maui. Man, Christmas in Maui, that's an idea. Mm-hmm. New Year's Eve in Maui. Hi, Ryan. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Oh, you're in Maui, Hawaii?
Yeah.
How nice.
You remember me?
I do.
Yeah, about my Mac. I got a new laptop.
Okay.
Because apparently the Mac that I got was only for temporarily. So.
Oh man.
Yeah, and I wasn't in the loop, so now they took the Mac.
Mom and Dad took your Mac away.
Yeah. Well, it.
Oh, that's cold, man. So, what do you have now?
So now I have a Dell Windows 8 Inspiron 14500 series.
All right, that's not bad. And you're going to get to keep this one?
Yes.
All right. That's not bad. Well, what can I do to help you with your new Dell laptop?
All right. Well, first off, I kind of got a little bit of crap on it.
How old are you?
12.
Every teenager and even preteen does this at some point or other. You blithely surf the internet. Maybe you were trying to download a mod for Minecraft.
How did you know? That's exactly what I was trying to do.
And you went to a site, and there it is, Gary's Mod Part 4. And little did you know that when you were downloading that, you would also be downloading a search helper called Conduit and 18 other pieces of not technically virus software, not technically malware, but a big pain in the butt, huh?
Yeah.
And definitely. Changes your homepage and your search page and pops up things. Yeah, it's just really annoying. You know how I know? I have a 12-year-old who did exactly that same thing. And you know what I did? You know what I ended up doing? I went through and uninstalled everything. And this stuff, most of this stuff is not malware. And how do we know it's not malware? Because of several things. First, it asks you before it installs. It may ask you in fine print, and it may not make, you know, maybe kind of semi-automatic, but it does ask you. The other thing is that it has an add remove. So if you go to programs and features, you should be able to uninstall all of these, including Conduit. But some of them get a little sticky.
All right, well, yeah, the problem that I'm having is whenever I open my internet browser, and for example, Google Chrome, and I click something, say, I don't know, YouTube, my bookmark, and then a pop-up saying, you have won an iPhone, click now to receive it or something, and it always does that. It's about every other click.
Isn't that nice? What, do they think you're a moron?
I know. So I.
Who does that fool? You gotta wonder.
Yeah, I got Super Anti-Spyware, the free version, and I've done 3 scans.
No, you see, first thing to do is try to remove it and add remove programs. And go. What you'll do is sort those programs that you've installed in by order of date, because what'll happen is all of that stuff was installed on the same date. And look at it, because sometimes it says, you know, add stuff, you know, add super ad helper. Sometimes it says Conduit. And you don't know what that is, but it'll all be grouped together. Uninstall all that stuff. Anti-spyware, by downloading that, you may even be downloading more stuff.
Yeah, well, I have super anti-spyware now.
Stop downloading stuff. That's rule number one. Don't download stuff. I don't care what it says it is. Super anti-spyware sounds like spyware to me. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, right, but it was a program recommended to me by my grandfather.
Well, he ought to know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I've run...
Don't. You should be able to remove all this stuff just by going to programs and features. It's be very careful. There are a few things like malware bytes that are legit and work, but you got to get the malware bytes, not somebody else's malware bytes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So be careful.
And
downloading and installing stuff is always bad unless you absolutely for sure know it's safe.
Correct.
And you don't.
No, not really.
Super anti-spyware is okay. It's not bad stuff if it's the super anti-spyware. It could be super anti-spyware, and then you'd be in problems. That's the thing. I mean, if I'm a bad guy, what am I going to name my spyware? I think I'll name it super anti-spyware. That'd fool them.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? Right. It is real. Yeah. It's legit if you got the real and legit one.
I do.
Because how do you know?
Oh, because, well, I've actually gone to the proper website. I actually typed in super anti-spyware, made sure that was a proper website.
Good. You're smart enough, Ryan, to know what to do. So do get it from the right source and all of that stuff.
Right. And I was just wondering, instead of actually having to go through the programs and uninstall, I don't have a lot on here that, you know, is personally meaning to me. I was just wondering if I do a factory reset.
That's what I would do.
Would it get rid of the OS?
What it would do, you have the OS on there in a separate hidden partition that generally malware can't get to. So Windows 8 has this nice restore system. Back up the stuff you do want to save, of course, and then do the restore. It'll get it right back to the factory. You just got it. So it'll get it right back to the factory condition. Do the updates. And now my suggestion is just don't run as administrator, run as a standard user so that you'll have to think twice. You'll have to log in as an administrator before you download super anti-spyware or super spyware or ultra super anti-spyware, because some of those are good and some of those aren't, and they all sound the same to me. The only way a bad guy can get in your system is either, one, by getting you to execute a program, no matter what, you know, and usually he's going to make that program sound good, or by taking advantage of a flaw in your operating system or some of the programs you use to get on the internet to sneak onto your system. So what absolutely you have to do is monitor what you're downloading and be extra cautious before you download software from anywhere. You've learned this lesson, I hope, now. Extra cautious. And game mods are notorious for this. And then secondarily, keep Windows up to date and all the software you use to get on the internet up to date. That means your browser, all of your browsers if you use more than one, and anything your browser uses like Adobe Reader, Flash, Java, if anything your browser uses when it's on the net, those all have to be kept up to date. That way a bad guy can't get you to run something because you're careful or sneak something onto your system because your software's not up to date. That's all super important, but I think you're smart about this and I think you're going to be okay. Ryan, great to talk to you. Good luck with your Minecraft malware. What we did with Michael, who's 12 also and very much into Minecraft and did exactly the same thing, is I just made him a standard user. He can't install software. He has to say, Leo, come over here. Would you install something for me? And then I will go, oh, yes. But it's much better, believe me, doing that than cleaning his system. Leo Laporte, I've learned my lesson too. The Tech Guy. More after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Rick, Akron, Ohio, you're next. Hi, Rick. Thanks for calling.
How are you, Leo?
I'm well. Happy New Year.
Yeah, great. Hey, you have too much fun at what you do.
This is fun. I enjoy what I do, even though sometimes, often, people call in with tough problems. You know, it's keeping technology running. It ain't easy anymore, if it ever was. Give me an example. Like, what's going on with your system?
Oh, I've got a Hewlett-Packard HP Pavilion Slimline.
Okay.
Which I bought about a year, coming up on 2 years, I think, ago. And, of course, it's off warranty now. But but I believe...
They wait to break until they're off warranty, of course.
Of course.
I don't know how they know.
But unfortunately, I think I got into some malware or something. Because what's been happening is that I would be online through a Wi-Fi, and all of a sudden the yellow triangle would come up over the bars, and it would tell me, you know, that I'm not connected to the net anymore. I'd be working in the middle of an email, and the thing would freeze up.
If I had a dollar for every time Wi-Fi drops out... I'd be a wealthy man. Wi-Fi, for some reason, this probably is not malware, by the way. The last thing malware wants to do is take you offline. Remember, these days, malware is not about vandalism or annoying you. Malware is about making money off of you. And the way they make money is by having you be online, either to show you ads, to bring you to websites like poker, you know, betting sites, or to use your computer to attack other computers or send spam, all of which requires you be online. So no malware is going to kick you offline. Although many other things will. And just being on Wi-Fi sometimes is the issue. And this is almost impossible for me to fix by a remote control. In fact, it might even be impossible for you to fix. This happens in my house all the time. I'll hear Lisa go, the Wi-Fi's down, and I'll look, and I'll say, no, it's not. It's working fine. Well, I don't have any. Well, it's here. I don't know what's – it just happens. And tell me a little bit about your system. It's Windows 7?
Yes.
Okay. Windows 7's pretty good with Wi-Fi. Are you near the router? Are you within, you know, 20 feet of the router, or are you distant?
I'm a little bit distant.
Okay. So some of it may just be you're on a borderline, you know, that and Wi-Fi, believe it or not, because it's at microwave wavelengths, 2.4 and 5 gigahertz, the higher the frequency, the more likely it is going to bounce off walls. So technically, Wi-Fi is a line-of-sight technology. It can go through walls, but not if there's any metal in the wall, or if it's really thick, it might slow it down. So it's not merely distance. It's also impediments that can cause problems. So if you take your computer, I know it's a desktop, but if you're next to the router and you have no problem, but distant from the router you do, then the issue is just that the Wi-Fi signal is not sufficient to keep a full-time connection. But it also can be your router. Remember, these routers are cheap computers, really. They're $40 computers, and they wear out. They have problems. So it's certainly worth trying to figure out what's going on with the router. Maybe unplug it, plug it in again, and see if that fixes things.
I've tried that.
One of the things
I did note, I did a reboot on the computer. When it rebooted, the blue light for the Wi-Fi did not come on the tower. So I was wondering if there may be something internally there that's not right.
I'm not super familiar with these slimline pavilions. Does the keyboard on it have a button for turning Wi-Fi on and off?
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't. Okay. Laptops often do. And it's funny. They do this for like airplane mode. And sometimes people accidentally turn off their Wi-Fi. So it's interesting. The blue light didn't come on. Did it come on eventually, or did you have to reboot?
What I had to do, I went into the system diagnostic in DOS and then brought up the system repair.
Ah, okay.
And once I did that, then it booted up all right. But it's, it's starting to have a trend of doing this on a regular basis.
I'm told by one of our chatters that this particular computer has a daughter card that provides the Wi-Fi, a card that you could swap out if that were the problem. It's not the first thing, though, that I would do, but it's good to know that it could be that module, that Wi-Fi module, and the ability to swap it out is nice if that's failed for you. But it's much more likely bouncing around signals, or the router is maybe going up or down. It wouldn't be a bad idea to get a Wi-Fi diagnostic program on your computer. Mm-hmm. There are quite a few of those. And what you can do is then see what channel you're on, what other Wi-Fi. This is one of the big problems with Wi-Fi is it's become so popular that there are many. Do you see many other Wi-Fi signals when you look at your Wi-Fi browser?
Oh, there's usually five or six.
Yeah. So what could very well be happening is your computer could be saying, hey, wait a minute, this Wi-Fi is promiscuous. And it could be saying, wait a minute, I see this is a stronger signal over here. I'm just going to go over here and say hi. And then that signal, you don't have the password, so you're not getting connectivity, which means you'll drop connectivity. That's annoying, and you certainly don't want that to happen, and that's something that can happen easily. So my suggestion is to go get – there's a great program called Insider, I-N-S-S-I-D-E-R. It's Insider with two S's. And that will let you browse your Wi-Fi. You can see what signals there are, what the strong signals are, what the weak signals are. And if yours is weak because you're distant from yours, but your neighbor's is strong because he's right next door, that could easily be the problem. Insider will also tell you what channels are occupied. And this is one way you can fix this is by saying, usually a Wi-Fi router will choose the best channel, but maybe it didn't. There are three channels available. You'll see 11, but they're really three, effectively three channels. And you might want to choose one that's less crowded. If you're having trouble with the hardware inside your computer, you don't have to replace it. You can buy a USB Wi-Fi adapter. Sometimes those work better because they're external to the case. But Insider will give you some information at least about what your Wi-Fi signal is doing. For instance, do you have a laptop? Do you have another computer?
I did.
If you had a portable, it'd be nice, because, or maybe borrow a buddy's portable, because then you can wander around and you can see the signal in the room with the adapter, the access point, and then move into your room and see if the how bad the signal is.
I've done that with my my nephew's laptop.
Oh, good.
On the sixth floor of an apartment building.
Oh, excellent.
And we went out on the balcony, and when we held it out at arm's length from the railing, we were able to receive everything.
Yeah. Welcome to Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
And this is radio frequency is really a black art. And Wi-Fi is so challenging. It's not an easy thing to fix. It operating system, you know, when Windows 8.1 came out, it broke the Wi-Fi on the Surface Pro, and it wasn't working well, and they had to do – Microsoft has done three updates. Same thing on OS 10 with a Macintosh. When Yosemite came out, it broke Wi-Fi. It is a thorny problem for some reason. So I'm not giving you a fixed answer, but I think trying a Wi-Fi analyzer on a laptop or a smartphone and getting a sense of your Wi-Fi as you move throughout the building would help. If it turns out the signal is weak where your desktop is, getting a repeater that you put halfway between your access point and your desktop would certainly make a difference. That's one of the things I've done. Everybody, you know, we even here in the studio have miserable Wi-Fi issues, and we have a full-time professional, an expert in this stuff, and he's doing all sorts of black magic. And even that, sometimes it doesn't work so well. But so there's a lot of different things that you can try. But there's some things, and I'd start with Insider, which is a really nice program, and that is from MetaGeek. But you'll find it with if you search for Insider with two S's.
Yeah.
Do a little diagnostics. It's the best I can offer. I wish there were a button. Yeah, I wish there were a button you could push, but. This is normal. We go through this constantly, both in the studio, at home, with our callers. It's a thorny issue. Sorry I can't be of more help, Rick, but good luck, and thanks for listening. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. On we go with our last show of 2014. I'll continue at the beginning of the next hour, talk a little bit about what to look forward to in 2014. Predictions. I'm notoriously bad at this, so really consider this a comedy segment. Also coming up at half past the hour, next hour, Chris Marquardt, our photo guy, with his New Year resolutions. But first, Michael in San Diego. Hi, Michael.
Hello. Can you hear me, Leo?
I hear you beautifully. Thanks for calling.
Well, I'm an expat to San Diego, but I graduated from Petaluma High School in 1961.
A local boy. Oh, boy, Petaluma was a different town in the 60s.
Totally, but it was still – I've been up there in the last couple of years, and it's still wonderful, everything west of the 101.
I agree. We're West Siders here in the Brick House Studios. We love – this. He's talking about the little town that we broadcast out of. And not such a little town anymore. It was when you were there.
Well, it's grown to the east side, but the west side, they fill in little empty lots every once in a while, but the west side is...
I love it.
...is still like I remembered 40 years ago,
yeah.
Whatever it was.
Oh, that's good to hear. Yeah, I'm very fond of this town, and my kids grew up here. And, you know, so often the case with small towns, kids can't wait to get out. I grew up in Santa Cruz, couldn't wait to get out. My kids want to come back, so I find that.
Well, it's a great town. I didn't grow up there. I'm an Army brat, and Petaluma was my 16th school.
Holy moly!
I got there in 1958, and luckily enough, I was able to finish my high school there the last 3 years. And tip of my hat to my friends on Middle Two Rock Road.
That's great. Awesome.
And, Leo, I'm a computer guy, and I'm really embarrassed that I have to call you about this, but I'm having trouble. By the way, I got my first PC in 1983. It was an Osborne 1.
Man, those were great. Gosh, I wanted one of those.
CPM.
I have one right now on the shelf here, but it's a little old. I don't think I can boot anymore. But that was an amazing computer because it was one of the first portables, even though it was 30 pounds. It was like lugging around a Singer sewing machine.
Exactly right, 30 some odd pounds. and Leo, in all these years, I've only had one desktop. I bought it from a local San Diego place, and I didn't like it because I was traveling, and I sold it to my brother, and I've had portables ever since, all different flavors. I'm on my third ThinkPad, and the reason I'm calling is I bought one from Amazon with Windows 7 pre-installed.
Okay.
But I need to get it to work in XP mode. And I did the Microsoft test to find out whether the BIOS was suitable for it, and it was not. And, Leo, I have done everything I know. And I did PC consulting for 25 years, Leo. And so, I know there's a key combination for getting into the BIOS on my ThinkPad, but I couldn't find it in the help, Lenovo help on the device itself, in Lenovo help online, or Googling what's the key combination for getting into the BIOS on an X140E ThinkPad.
I'm pretty sure it's F2.
Well, I tried most of the, but part of the problem, you know, is it has to do with timing too. You
absolutely
have to hit key exactly at the right time.
Absolutely. So if you're new to computing or you haven't ever had to really fix a computer, you may not know this, but before the Windows part starts up, there's something called BIOS, the Basic Input-Output System, that is the most primitive little bitty operating system the computer uses so that it can see a disk. It can't even see a disk when it first comes on. It's dumb as a box of rocks. So the first thing a computer does is loads the BIOS, which is stored in kind of permanent memory on the system. And then it gets a little bit smarter. It goes from, I don't know what's going on, to, oh, I see a hard drive. And it will load in the operating system and get smarter and smarter. BIOSes can be updated. BIOSes, inside the BIOS, there's even a setup utility that you can change and modify it. And that's what you really, Michael's asking, is how do I get into BIOS setup? Used to be when you turned on a machine, it would say press delete to get into BIOS setup. But now they're so anxious to advertise that Lenovo and Dell and everybody else put up a big logo, right? Instead of seeing press F2 to get into BIOS, you're seeing a big old logo. So the first thing I would try is hitting escape, because that usually gets rid of that logo.
I've tried those. Yeah, I've tried the
and it didn't do it.
Yeah, and F8 with the Toshibas. I don't know.
So as far as I know, every time I've used a Lenovo, it's been F2. What do you think, Alex?
Is there a Blue Think Vantage button?
Yes, I do have that button on my keyboard.
Try that.
Yeah, okay.
That's Alex, who's our Windows expert, the one and only Windows expert in here. He's a ThinkPad guy. He says that Blue Think Vantage button. That'll at least give you a menu, and then you can boot into BIOS from there.
Yeah, I'll try those things. But this is only the second time I've been able to get through to you in all these many years I've been listening, Leo. But,
well, it's a pleasure to talk to you, Michael.
A great show.
It.
By the way, I got my first TiVo in 1999, and by the time your book came out on TiVos, I had already switched over to a DirecTV combo TiVo, but I'm back to a Romeo now.
I love the new TiVos, the Romeos. Those are great.
It's very nice. It's
I missed my TiVo after all those years. The DVR boxes the cable companies give you are horrible.
Oh, yeah. I've tried to use my friend's versions of TiVo, and it's a joke.
Oh, TiVo's, as dated as it is, and they could really update the software a little bit, it's still the best thing out there.
Yeah, I think it is, too. Yeah. It's the most natural interface for
I agree.
What makes sense to people.
I have... the new Comcast X1 boxes, and I flee into my den so I can use my TiVo because I can't. Those X1 boxes are horrible. Hey, I appreciate the call. It's great to talk to you, Michael. I hope you'll call back again.
I'm going to try to stop in next time I'm in Petaluma.
Oh, I'd love to see you.
All right.
Thanks, Michael. Take care. Max Milpitas, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Max.
Hello. Good afternoon, Leo.
Good afternoon. I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing great. First of all, I want to thank you to be there. I've learned quite a bit from you by listening to your program, and I think my IQ has improved a bit.
Awesome.
So that's very good news for me.
Awesome.
Leo, I've heard a number of calls today regarding the malware FBI bug.
Yeah.
This guy at Maui downloading God knows what's in his laptop. You know, I've already agreed with your recommendation about what to do and what not to do when you're surfing.
Okay.
What I want to add to that, based on my own experience, you know, I'm a 60-year-old guy, and I believe only paranoid will survive. So based on that, I went into a program called Sandbox D last year, which essentially allows you to invoke your web browser and also the email client, which I use, you know, the Outlook, within the confined area of your laptop or your computer. So, and you go surfing the web, but you are running all that within the confines of the sandbox team. You are not actually into the operating system. So if you happen to run to a site which you have not been to it before, or by mistake you happen to download something, you could simply delete the content of the sandbox team and everything's all good.
I love Sandboxy. We've recommended it, and I've known about it for years. I think it's a little bit more sophisticated for the more sophisticated users, but it absolutely works. In fact, the notion of sandboxing is not new. It was originally the idea behind Java as well. The idea that when you do something on the internet, you're doing it in kind of a safe space that can be reset.
Right.
I like sandboxing. I generally tell people not to run, you know, not to run as a standard, as a administrator, but run as a limited or standard user. And that gives you some of the benefits of sandboxing. But yeah, if you're smart enough to figure out how to use it and to keep it on, I think sandboxing is an excellent choice. And it's free. It's really, I think, Sandbox IE, because it originally was to Sandbox Internet Explorer. But those of us in the know, we just call it sandboxy. Not for the inexperienced. And remember, this show, Max, is really the one show I do. I do a lot of really techie shows on our Twit network. But this show is really aimed at a normal person.
And, like me.
Are you normal? Are you normal, Max? All right. If you say so. Hey, Max, great suggestion. I really appreciate it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. The party's over. Well, it's just beginning, actually. New Year's Eve coming up. But then after that, a new year. Maybe you got some new gadgets for the holiday, and it's time to say goodbye to the old, ring in the new. What are you going to do with that old gadget? Well, I hope you're going to go to Gazelle.com. It's the place to sell your old iPhone, Samsung phone, your iPad, your Surface tablet, your Apple computer, your other products. Gazelle is the place. They'll buy your old stuff, give you cash, give you a PayPal credit, or better yet, an Amazon gift card, which they'll bump up 5%. If you've lost or broken your phone, Gazelle will also sell you a new phone. Yeah, you can now buy certified pre-owned iPhones, Samsung Galaxy phones, and iPads right from Gazelle at a great price. They have two conditions of phones. They've got certified like new, which is, as it says, like new, and certified good. Those are really where you get the best deals. They're just some, you know, some gentle signs of wear, a nick here or there. But it's a great way to save money. Probably get a replacement phone if you lose or break your phone that'll be in as good as or better condition than your original. All devices are put through a rigorous 30-point inspection to ensure they're fully functional. And certified pre-owned devices are backed by a 30-day risk-free return policy. So now you can sell and buy at Gazelle.com. We love Gazelle. You'll get paid in cash. Payment is fast, within a few days of your item being received, and it's totally risk-free. Gazelle, if you forget, will wipe your data for free. No wonder they've paid out over $175 million to over a million customers. Free shipping, fast processing. Gazelle. Not only will they buy, they'll also sell. We love Gazelle. It's where I take all my old stuff. You've got cash sitting in your drawer, and you're not even using it. GAZELLE.com. What's your phone worth? Take a minute and go to gazelle.com to find out. Gazelle! I am Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Hey, 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 welcome today to the Tech Guy Show. This is the show where we answer your questions about computers, the internet, cell phones, home theater, MP3 players, and all that jazz. Love taking your calls, talking high tech. Don't forget that the stuff I mention on this show, you can find on our website all the links, all the show notes, all the answers to every question, techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. And that's free. There's no subscription needed. You'll find everything we talk about there. So make a note of that. It's a great way to get into our chat room. The phone number is there. And as I said, audio and video from every show, broken up by day, by hour, even by question. So you can go right to the question. You can see the answer. And if you have an additional thought, you can post it there as well. TechGuyLabs.com. We're headed into a new year, just a couple more days to 2015. We've been talking on the show today a little bit about what to expect in 2015. And I mentioned a disclaimer, I'm no good at this. Because that's one of the reasons I love technology. You don't know what's going to happen. There's some things we do know what's going to happen. For instance, this 2014 was the year that the Sony hackers made so much news. And Sony's still reeling from that. That was really the first time we'd seen a company just taken down by hackers. Everything on Sony's servers and hard drives was released to the public, to the great embarrassment of Sony Pictures Entertainment. And frankly, I think it's a detriment and to loss not only of revenue from movies like The Interview, but to future revenues, because I think it's going to be harder for Sony to make deals with Hollywood stars who will be understandably a little bit nervous. But one point to take away from this, and by the way, there's still a lot of debate about whether it was North Korea that did this. I know the president and the FBI both have said publicly, it's North Korea, we know it. A lot of my friends, a lot of security experts find that hard to believe. From the evidence that we see, and not all of it's public apparently, it seems far-fetched to say that that evidence means it's North Korea. However, if it is, expect an escalation, I think, of cyber warfare between nations. And that is not good. That is not good for anybody. One thing that's pretty obvious with the Sony hack is that every company is somewhat vulnerable. It's possible. This is a fascinating subject for and open to debate, and I'm willing to take your call and debate it. It's possible to lock down a company's data, just as it's possible to lock down your data. It's a lot easier to lock down your data than a company's data because of how companies operate. The free flow of information is important. You know, the best way to lock stuff down is to encrypt it, to limit access to silo data, to only pass along data on a need-to-know basis. These things will really help a hacker. Even if a hacker gets into one part of the company's network, he won't be able to get into the rest. In Sony's case, of course, they were able to get in everything because Sony made a conscious business decision that it's better for business if people, the free flow of information, if people can share data, share notes, talk to each other. If email's encrypted, it's only visible between the person sending it and the person receiving it. Well, that isn't how most businesses work. Mail gets forwarded on, gets CC'd, multiple recipients. It just impedes business. And this is something we've talked about a lot. There's a trade-off between convenience and security. You can have really good security, but it's going to be inconvenient. An individual can do that. It's fine for me to only be able to read email that's sent to me or encrypt only email going to one person. It's fine for me to silo my information and lock it down and encrypt it. It's a little harder for a business to do so. And one thing many security experts have agreed, first, we do agree that Sony's security was terrible. But it's not clear that it's possible to run a business that is absolutely safe, that's absolutely secure. Sony could have done better, but I think it's pretty clear that it's difficult to do perfectly. And all you have to do is look at things like the successful attack in February 2014 on the Sands Casino. Iranian activists were very angry at the Sands owner, Sheldon Adelson, because he was giving a lot of money to Israel, very active in politics. And they decided to target him, and to do so, they attacked the back-end computer systems for the Sands casinos. These are casinos not just in Vegas, but in Macau, all around the world. These back-end systems run the gambling operations, the security. This is the crown jewels of the Sands Casino. I have to think that because these were so valuable, these were protected as best as possible, isolated from other systems. They, I'm sure, had the best possible security, and the Iranian hackers still were able to take them down and take them offline and break them. We don't know how much money the casino lost, but it's clear that the hackers were able to do damage. And I think that points out the difficulty of true security in a business. There's probably no better protected computer system than the back end of a major casino operation, and they still got in. So I think one of the things I'm sad to say that we're going to see is more breaches, more break-ins. The good news is that in 2015, banking laws have changed a little bit, and you will start to see this, that all credit card issuers are now required to use a chip and sign technology. Instead of a swipe strip, there'll be a physical chip in the next credit card you get. This has to be implemented by October 2015. And even though it won't be chip and pin, it will be much more secure, much more difficult to duplicate credit cards. That should improve things. I think Apple Pay and other touch-to-pay solutions are going to even be better. When you use Apple Pay or Google Wallet or Samsung's payment system or the payment system, soft card payment system for Verizon, when you use those systems, your credit card is not transferred to the merchant. The merchant doesn't, in fact, keep or have at any point your credit card number. It has a token, a secure token, that is enough to get paid, but not, and that's important because so many credit cards have been leaked by Home Depot and by Target and by other merchants who have lax security. The law will also put the liability on whoever in the chain has the worst security. For the first time ever, retailers will be liable for losses, not just credit card companies. So this is going to change the landscape dramatically, and this will happen this year, 2015, and by October, chip and sign will have to be in place. And I suspect that you will see Tap and Pay, whether it's Apple Pay or some other solution. It'll be all of them, probably. You'll see Tap and Pay everywhere. And you'll see more secure merchant services. And that's good news. That will really save banks a lot of money. Right now, they're eating a lot of costs. This Target breach cost them so much money. They're actually suing Target now, trying to recover some of it. That's a big deal, and I think that's a big shift. We haven't had to care too much about security because we haven't been liable. If your credit card gets ripped off, as long as you notify the bank in a timely fashion, you owe nothing. That's how the law works. The bank pays it off. Now, of course, the bank probably passes that along to us. That's one reason credit card rates are so high. Banks are going to make that money up somehow. But I think by making everybody equally share the responsibility and the burden of protecting your data, it's going to make it better. That's good news. That's good news. So maybe the year, if 2014 was the year of the hacker, maybe 2015, well, we can cross our fingers, will be a little bit better. One of the things that happened in 2014, it's just breaking news, but I think it's going to be very interesting to see. Marriott, the Marriott company, has been blocking personal Wi-Fi networks on their properties. They've actually petitioned the FCC for permission to do this. The American Hospitality and Lodging Association and Marriott International say they want to be able to block Wi-Fi access points for security reasons and to improve their network because of interference. But I think many of us think it's just because they want to charge you $15 a day for their expensive Wi-Fi and don't want you to be using your phone or MiFi to save money. Be very interesting to see. In fact, Marriott in March 2013 was actually blocking guests from using their smartphones as Hi-Fi hotspots at the Opryland Hotel. That is, I think, illegal. They were de-authenticating guests' Wi-Fi hotspots. Well, we'll find out what the FCC rules in 2015. And I hope Marriott doesn't win on this one. A lot of interesting stuff will be happening in 2015, but more interesting, your calls, that's next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Last show of 2014, getting ready for 2015. And who should my surprised eye... How does that go? I threw open the window. Anyway, here comes Dan in Bakersfield. Hi, Dan. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Dan.
It'll be Leo.
I am your only hope. I once interviewed Carrie Fisher, and I said, you know, Carrie, in the movie, it's cut off. You say, help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi, you're my only hope. She said, no, it's not. I said, it is. Now, we didn't have YouTube back then, so I could prove it. But actually, I think she does say hope. There's a P in there.
Really?
Help me, Obi-Wan. Anyway, yeah, that's my claim to fame.
I'll have to revisit that movie. I believe that
she's cut off a little bit. Well, help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope. What can I do for you, Dan?
I am stuck at choosing a video card for a computer build that I'm putting together. I have everything else on ready to pull the trigger on.
Yes.
I am a musician with a home studio, and I have up to 30 virtual instruments and effects running at any one time. Whoa. So I need a lot of screen space with high resolution, lots of little tiny buttons. I just ordered a Dell 27-inch IPS monitor.
Nice.
So that'll be a plus. If I like it, I'm going to order another one and set it right next to it.
Yeah.
I don't know whether to go with the typical graphics card for gamers or a workstation video card, which is more expensive and a little shaky on the reviews that I've read.
Yeah, you know, you're not doing as though you might think so, anything demanding.
No.
Because the video card isn't involved in the music rendering. And a 27-inch screen, what is the resolution of that screen? It's probably
1920 by 1080.
Oh, it's not even it's just a 1920 by 1080. That's easy. So you don't need to spend any extra money on a fancy video card. Any video card you can buy will be more than adequate to driving a 1920 by 1080 screen. That's not. Are you sure that's all you're getting on that screen?
On the one I ordered from Costco, it's a 27-inch 1920 by 1080. It's an IPS.
Yeah, I mean, that's low resolution for a screen that size. It's easy. So the number of dots is what's challenging to the video card. Unless you're playing a video game and you have to render, you know.
I do not game very much at all.
So all the stuff you're doing is CPU bound. You do want to get a lot of memory, RAM, to hold all the instruments, and a fast processor. That's more important. The video card is easy.
On both of those items.
Yeah. The video card, you could use the motherboard graphics. The Intel Iris graphics would be fine because it's not a high-res screen.
Well, there is no onboard video with the X99 platform with the Haswell version 3 chip.
Okay.
So I am forced to get a card, and that's why.
Yeah. So you should be able to get an $80 NVIDIA card to be just fine. Nothing fancy.
Low power, no big noise coming out of it.
Exactly. Exactly why you don't want to get a fancy video card, right? I'll tell you the low end. This is, by the way, a great resource for people building PCs. It's a website my friend Ryan Schrout runs called PC Perspective. It's PCPER.com. And if you go to PCPER.com, you'll see right at the top the HW leaderboard. They keep this up to date based on their reviews all the time. This latest update, December 17th of this year, so just a week ago or 2 weeks ago. And they have four systems. The Dream system, which is a $2,794 system, down to the low-end system, which is $386. And they will recommend all the components for those systems. For instance, the video card in the low-end system, which would be more than adequate to what you want, is a $50 video card. The R7-240 or R7-250, you could actually do Crossfire if you really wanted to beef it up. You could get two of them. But they're $50 cards, and they're more than enough. So go to since you're building a whole system, this is a worthwhile page to go to. See what they recommend. They have four different systems at four different price points. The high-end, the Dream system, the mid-range, and the low-end, and you can see what they recommend in each category for not just video card, but processor, motherboard, memory, and all of the above.
I'll do that. I've been on PCPartPicker.com.
This is the guy. These guys I trust. I know they're completely editorially independent, so you could trust their recommendations, and they test everything. I know these guys very well. In fact, Ryan does a show on my podcast network called This Week in Computer Hardware, in which he talks about this stuff. And
so what is the specific application for a workstation type video card then?
So a video card typically we call them the GPU or graphics processor unit, does on the very base, the low end, which is what you're doing, it's responsible for putting the video up on the screen. But in this case, you're not driving a lot of pixels. 1920 by 1080 is actually very low resolution nowadays. So that isn't a challenging thing to do. It doesn't have to have a lot of VRAM. It's not doing a lot of calculations. Where it gets busy is if it's doing in real-time 3D rendering. So it's being sent by the CPU a lot of numbers that it has to turn into a gorgeously rendered high-resolution picture in real time, second by second, millisecond by millisecond. That's when you're doing a lot of work, and that's when you have a workstation. It's typically 3D graphics that is the challenge. There are times that a GPU is used, for instance, in rendering video. If you're doing video editing, if you're using Photoshop and you do some of the filters, like the Gaussian blur is the one that's often used in benchmarks that take a picture and blur it. It will sometimes these programs are smart enough to call on the GPU for certain categories of operations. But even with video rendering, having a fast CPU is more important than a fast GPU.
So PC Perspective is the site I get the latest stuff in. Okay.
I love their reviews, and I trust them. And this is important because a lot of sites you might go to don't disclose that, well, maybe they're a little predisposed towards the advertiser or whatever. In this case, I know Ryan very well, and I know he is a pure and objective reviewer.
Well, that's what I needed to hear. Yep. I've heard you so many years, I consider you a friend.
That Kaveri card is cheap, $50, and will do everything you need. Kaveri.
Thank
you.
That's
all you need. You're welcome. I'm glad you consider me a friend. I'm honored. I'm even touched. Nice way to go into the new year. Thank you, Dan. Take care. We're both shedding a little tear here. That's what I love doing, what I'm doing, because I'm talking about stuff I care about, I'm interested in, and I get to, you know, do it with you. So what we, and I should mention, I haven't mentioned this yet on the show, but when we talk about stuff like, you know, this Kaveri card, what we'll do is we'll make notes about it. James DeRuvo is writing as I speak, and then Josh Windisch takes the web page. We put it all up on the web, free and available to all. You don't have to sign up or give me your email or anything, at techguylabs.com. After the show, Josh will also attach audio and video from each question. You can go question by question, if you wish, or hour by hour, or show by show. Watch, listen, read the answer, and even comment on the answer. So if you're, you know, if you're doing something similar, a musician, and you have some recommendations for Dan, you could put them there in the comments. And as I said, this is always free. There's no sign up. There's no fee. It's like the old days of the web where you'd go to a site and it's just there. TechGuyLabs.com. I am Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Last show of 2014. Last show with this guy here, Chris Marquardt, our photo guy. Happy New Year, Chris.
Happy New Year, Leo. How are you doing?
I am great. You are ensconced now in your new home, I see.
Still lots of boxes. On that side of the camera, you can't see that, but I'm not going to turn the camera around. It's horrible on this side.
I hope you had a good Christmas.
I did, absolutely.
Good. You and Monica had a lovely time. And was there snow in... Now, what's your new town?
It's still Hanover. It's just okay. The other side of Hanover. Okay. So we moved within like 30 miles.
No snow in Hanover for Christmas.
Well, not quite yet. It's trying to move its way from the south and to move its way up, but it's not reaching here just yet.
Here's a guy who goes to the to Mount Everest every summer, so I think snow does not scare him. What do we want to talk about today, Mr. Marquardt?
Well, it's the last show of the year. It's the last photo guy segment of the year. So I was thinking of New Year's resolutions in terms of photography. Because, you know, we all, and I think everyone is a bit guilty here. Everyone who shoots with a digital camera, everyone has a bit of digital, I call it digital guilt, you know? It's like this huge amount of pictures sitting there from probably the entire year has been accumulating.
And you end thousands. Up
just, Yes, and maybe this is the time where some people sit down and go, okay, I'm going to deal with those 5,000 pictures now. And it's probably also the time when some people are starting to think about what can I change for next year? And so I thought we could just talk a bit about this, you know?
I have a heavy heart already. Well, I think that's a good one, is to process the pictures quickly after I take them. I even took pictures of Christmas Eve and Christmas that I haven't looked at again. And, you know, I probably haven't even transferred them off the card. I've got to do that. It's one of the reasons I think Google has done us all such a great favor, because anything I take on my smartphone is automatically uploaded. I have it turned on, automatically uploaded to Google Plus, and they even go through it and pick the highlights.
They're actually doing a pretty decent
job. They do a good job.
It's amazing. Yeah. And you know, I've kind of started to distinguish between the kind of shots that I take. Some of them I take now deliberately with an iPhone, because I know that they will be uploaded to iCloud and kind of taken care of. Not the post processing. I still want control over that. That's because I'm a photographer. But if you're not a photographer, if that's not your main thing, then there's a good chance that these automated services can help.
Absolutely. I took pictures on Christmas Day opening gifts, and my daughter Abby got a cute little fur collar, and so I took a number of pictures of it, and Google automatically enhanced it into a quad. I mean, probably not something I would, you know, one of the pictures is a little blurry. I mean, you know, it's done by a computer, but still, that's nice to have.
It's true.
And I feel like, wow, thank you, Google. You know, thank you for doing that.
And I do that sometimes manually. Last time we talked about the different iPhone apps and Android apps that I recommended. One was Diptych, that you can use to put four pictures together.
Yeah.
But in this case, Google has just done this for you automatically.
Yeah.
One thing I find is that photographers, as soon as you start getting more serious about photography, I think it's really worth in investing a bit into learning a bit more, better technique and these kind of things that will make you take less pictures and get a bigger yield of good pictures.
Well, one thing that both Lisa and I have pledged to do is read the camera manual.
That's a good starting point.
Yeah.
Even though they can be a bit daunting. Because
and they're not very good. My Sony manual's terrible.
Yeah, I know. They kind of require you to have a bit of pre-knowledge already.
Yeah. But there's books for a lot of camera models. If you go on Amazon and search the camera model, this is one way a number of photographers have found to make a little extra money on the side, is to write a better manual.
True.
And many
true.
Cameras, absolutely. There is a better manual.
It's too bad I haven't written one yet. But you know, the secret is that the basics of photography are identical no matter what camera you use. There's exposure time, there's an aperture, there's an ISO. And that's pretty much the same thing with every single camera. When you go into all the details, I mean, the things they want to sell you the cameras on are all the bells and whistles that, like, do HDR and panoramas automatically. These kind of things, those are different between the different camera manufacturers and different models. But the basics, exposure, colors, white balance, that's all pretty much the same with every camera. So if you get these basics down, you'll be able to pick up any camera and take great pictures.
Good point. Composition, lighting, and all that. Maybe I've kind of already started. One of my resolutions is to always have a camera with me. You know,
which is easy these days if you have.
Well, I always have a camera phone, but even like bring my, because my Sonys are small, light. I got straps for everybody from Optek. These are nice, comfy straps.
Use them too.
Yeah, I like them. And I got an Optek sling. So these are the straps that the camera hangs by your side, but you can swoop it up. So now I can easily carry this everywhere I go. And I feel like if I had my camera with me more often, maybe I'd take more pictures.
And that is actually one of the things that's one of those big advantages with the more newer mirrorless cameras.
Like, they're not so big.
Yeah. Micro Four Thirds or even the Sony A7 series with a full frame sensor, they are small enough to have them with you all the time. Whereas I actually find myself sometimes not taking the big Canon 5D Mark II with me because it is just big, yes.
I don't even carry with me sometimes when I'm in Paris or Buenos Aires. It was just too heavy. So having a lighter camera has made a big difference. And I like this this sling style strap. OPTECH.com. They're not very expensive. Yes. They're like $20. Replaces the strap that comes with your camera, which is a good thing because that's just a big advertisement for the expensive camera you're carrying.
True. So
that's just it just basically says steal this. And so I put on the kind of anonymous strap, and I have the sling capability, and I just feel like I can carry this around kind of without thinking about it, and I look like a dork, but I'm always ready.
Well, no, you don't. Okay, here's one more thing. One more thing that I constantly make this a resolution, and this time again, it's a resolution, and I incorporate a bit more of that. It's incorporate more photography into your life. Go to exhibitions. If there is an exhibition in your town, go there. Mm-hmm. Get some books about photography. Not necessarily how-to books and things, but books that feature good photography by maybe famous photographers. Listen to more photography podcasts if that's your thing. Maybe have a little journal that you write your photo ideas into that you can work on. And then just go out and do this. Play with photography because, you know, it's pretty much free. You have a camera, you have a memory card that you can erase, so you can take as many pictures as you like. You can experiment. You can make mistakes, and making mistakes is a good way to learn. So make your life a bit more photographic. Incorporate it in different areas. If you shoot, if you like cooking, take pictures of your food. If you like gardening, take pictures of your garden. Put them on a blog. There's so many different ways to get your photography out there and to just immerse yourself in photography in very little corners here and there, and that will make you a better photographer.
It's a great hobby, and I just love it. It fulfills my need to buy fancy technology on a regular basis, but also my need to create, to be artistic. Highly recommended. Two more resolutions for you. One is, of course, to follow Chris on all the media and particularly to take a look at his workshops because he does some great ones at discoverthetopfloor.com. The other, to take part in our photographic assignments each month. What is the assignment this month?
The current assignment is climate.
Take a picture illustrating climate, upload it to our Flickr Tech Guy group. You can upload a picture a week, and then later in the month, next year, Chris will be reviewing those. Chris, Happy New Year. Thank you for being a part of the show each and every week.
Happy New Year. Thanks for having me.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We continue on with our last show of 2014. And our next call is Mark in Villa Park. Hi, Mark.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good, except I have a computer that's giving me a problem. I have a 2-year-old Toshiba satellite PC with Windows 7. And if I'm looking at a streaming video or a YouTube video, or as long as the video's playing, the computer stays on. I can get a ham sandwich. I can clean the I can read War and Peace, all that stuff. But if I'm on a static web page and I walk away for more than like 2 minutes, I have to turn the computer back on again.
Okay, so before you walk away, before, can you just stay and look at it and see what it's doing? Does it just shut down?
Yeah, it just shuts down.
Does it say goodbye?
No.
Does it say, I can't go on? Goodbye, cruel world. I'm shutting down. No, does it go black suddenly?
It literally fades to black.
I'm sorry, I shouldn't laugh. So it's not actually shutting down.
Well, I mean.
Oh, it's going to sleep. Maybe it's just going to sleep.
Okay, because I have to press the power button.
There's no way to wake it up, huh?
Right.
So here's the first thing I'd do is I'd go into your Windows 7 power settings in the control panel.
Okay.
And I would turn off Hibernate because that's, okay, I think, what it's doing. So if your computer's not active, see, the video tells the computer, goes, oh, I see he's watching a video. I'm not going to shut down. But if you're just sitting there and nothing's happening, the mouse is not moving, nobody's hitting the keyboard, there's no video on the screen, the computer is going to go to sleep. Now, there's two kinds of sleep that all computers do. And by the way, sleep is always a little problematic. It's not so much the sleep, it's waking up from the sleep. You know, it's just like a human. It goes, what? I don't want to wake up. So the most problematic type of, there's two kinds of sleep. One is you turn off the screen, you maybe turn off the hard drive, you go into a low power mode, but you continue to refresh RAM. because memory, RAM memory, where your programs are, your operating system is, the stuff that's running, if you don't keep giving that power, it goes blank. So the sleep mode continues to power RAM, continues to keep it refreshed, and that way you move the mouse or you hit the keyboard and the screen comes on and you're ready to go. Nothing's changed. It's just, it almost looks like it's just turning the screen off. It actually is doing a little more than that. That's sleep. There's a serious kind of sleep called hibernate that many computers have trouble with. What hibernate does is, same thing, says you're inactive, it says I'm going to sleep now, but what it does is it takes the contents of RAM and saves it to the disk. And then it shuts everything down, just like it's off. The only difference is when you hit a key or move a mouse, it's supposed to wake up, reload RAM from the disk, and go back to where it was, just like sleep. It takes a little longer, and many computers have a lot of trouble with hibernate. So the first thing I would do is go into the power settings and disable hibernate. If that's turned on, turn it off. Then you may find the computer sleeps, but when you move the mouse, it wakes up and you don't have to shut down.
Great.
This is very common. If that doesn't fix it, turn off sleep and see if that fixes it. The only problem with that is, of course, it's never going to turn off the screen or sleep or anything, and you're going to use power unnecessarily. But it's not too bad. Sleep can be problematic for Windows.
All right. Can I ask you one last question?
Sure.
I have a Verizon cell phone, and I'd like to archive some of the voicemails I got on there. How best could I do that?
Yeah. So there are services that will do this. You can subscribe and download your voicemails and save them. If you do it ahead of time, you can use something like a Google Mail or turn on Verizon's visual voicemail, and it'll save them. But if you haven't done it and it's stored on the Verizon system, then you need a way to play them back and record them. If you Google save voicemail, you'll find a number of services that will allow you to do this, including, you know, things like Voicemail Forever. And the whole idea is you can save it from the Verizon store by playing them back, and it will record them.
Is there any way to get a CD of the voicemails?
Yeah, this will do it.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. Have a happy new year.
You're very welcome. Happy new year to you, and thanks for listening to the show. Mark Villa Park. That was Mark. How about Larry in Camarillo? Hi, Mark. Hi, Larry.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome to the show.
Here's the thing. I only have a limited time with you.
You have 3 minutes.
I got 10 years. I got 10 years of stuff. First of all, I want to say,
okay, don't try to get it all in one call, okay?
No, I'm going to do it quickly, so you got to, you know.
I'll get out of the way. It's all yours. You take the microphone.
So here's the thing, Leo. I heard you years ago. I want to say I was using an 8088, but it might have been at the point that we had 3.1 Windows. But suffice it to say, the first time I heard you, I said, this guy has the greatest voice in radio. I just listened to him. And so then I started listening for real. And then when you came on Bill Handel's show in the morning down here on KFI,
right, out
to Ventura County.
Still do that show every Friday, yeah.
You know, you yell at Bill. You tell him, you know, how screwed up he is, and then he admits it and he beats himself up about it.
I don't know. Bill lets me get away with murder. I don't know, because most people he will not let do that.
Well, he's so tech unsavvy, but he just loves to have you tell him, you know, you need to buy a new.
I spend his money. And worse, I get his wife to spend his money.
Yeah, well, now, I'm thinking Bill can afford it.
I'm thinking he can. He's the number one radio host in Northern California. I think he can afford it. In Southern California.
Yeah. He's wonderful. Yeah. He's so self-effacing and honest. I just love him.
Yeah,
great guy. So then, I'm going along, and at one point before, I told your screener, which she keeps checking back. It's very sweet. She keeps coming back around about every 15 minutes.
That's her job, to jolly you up. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, I told her that when you gave the tip, I heard it not too long ago, maybe 3 months ago, but you said the thing about you can avoid 96% of viruses by switching to a user account and don't be on there as administrator, which I did for both my wife and I. We have two separate offices with two separate computers. And that was the greatest tip. It gives one a lot of peace of mind. But I think earlier you gave a tip, and this tip has helped untold friends of mine, at least 20 people, where I go to their house and they say, oh, my computer's running so slow, I think I need a new computer, and then they're whining to you. And I think you gave me this tip about the run command and the regedit with a lot of caution. You talked to some guy on the radio, and finally it seems to me, I'm giving you credit for this, but you may tell me, no, I never said that. But you said go to regedit, local machine software, Microsoft Windows Current, and go to the run folder because that's the same as the start folder. And I've found so many programs plant themselves, executable files in there that are unneeded.
It is a dangerous thing to do. He must have talked me into it. There's a better way to do it without opening the registry, which is to use a program Microsoft offers called Auto Runs. And that's Mark Rusinovich wrote that from SysInternals, and it's great. And it does pretty much the same thing. It examines the registry as well as other places where programs can start up, and that's where you can disable it a little more safely. But, yeah, that's kind of what you're doing there. Auto runs from SysInternals.
Not where I'm comfortable, but I got to say, it's hair-raising.
Yeah, here's the problem with editing the registry. You can make a change that will keep the computer from booting. And changes in the registry don't have to be saved. They're immediate.
Exactly.
Hey, we're out of time. You're going to have to save your next 10 years of comments for the next call. But do call back because I love talking to anybody who likes me. Thank you, Larry from Camarillo. We're going to take a break. Come back with more. Lots more, I'm sure. Leo Laporte. In fact, we'll take a look ahead to 2015 in the next break. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Leo Laporte, the tech guy, the last hour of the Tech Guy Show in 2014 as we enter in the new year. This is a show where we talk about computers, the internet, cell phones, MP3 players, camcorders, and all that jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the number if you want to talk high tech. Heather Hammond, done a great job all year long, Heather. She's our phone ranger. Nathan Staten, my musical director, also a great person to work with all year long. We really appreciate it. And thanks to you for being here all year long. We're going to have a great year next year. We're going to have a lot of fun. I've been spending some of the time on the show today talking about what to expect in 2015. You know, what I haven't talked yet about is the four horsemen of the internet, as Eric Schmidt calls them, the big companies that are driving the internet these days, Google and Amazon, Facebook and Apple. And I guess you could add a few others to that mix, maybe Twitter, and that's about it. Probably not Microsoft. Microsoft conspicuously left off that list. Actually, 2015 is going to bring a new version of Microsoft Windows. That's a big story. Windows 10 will come out. Its consumer preview will come out in the spring, and probably by the fall of 2015, we'll see a new version of Windows. And it's going to be interesting to watch what Microsoft does. Early indications are they're going to back down a little bit on their touch-first philosophy for Windows 8. Windows 8 is probably the least successful version of Windows ever. It's been ignored pretty much by businesses. And even consumers have often said, I'd prefer Windows 7 to Windows 8. I'm not going to upgrade, or I'm not even going to, or if I buy a new computer, I'm not even going to buy Windows 8. I'll buy the older version of the operating system. Microsoft is feeling that pain a little bit. And 2015 will bring us Windows 10. They're skipping 9, by the way. Not sure why, but they're going straight to 10. And I think we can expect a little bit of a retrench on Windows 10, a little step back. The start menu will be back. The desktop will be back. Microsoft's got a tough problem, and it was a tough 2014 for Microsoft. They've struggled with Windows Phone. They acquired Nokia for a huge amount of money, and there's some question whether that was a successful acquisition. The Xbox One, which they debuted in 2014, didn't do as well as the PlayStation 4, their arch rival. I hope 2015 will see a kind of resurgence of the Xbox One, mostly because I have one and I like it. But Microsoft's got a tough road to hoe. They're not the powerhouse that they have been in the last couple of decades. And it was interesting that I think it was Eric Schmidt who talked about the four horsemen of the internet and left out Microsoft. It really is a world where Google and Facebook and Apple and Amazon kind of drive change. And I think it will be a good year for all four companies. Apple is expected to announce some new products this year. Of course, we'll see an iPhone 6 successor, the 6S, I'm not sure what they'll call it. And if Apple is true to its usual TikTok, that's just going to be the same hardware with some new features. What will be much more interesting is the Apple Watch. That's going to come out in just a few months, I think, sometime in the first half of 2015. We've seen so many interesting wearables, from the Google Glass, which really was a failure, glasses that everybody hated, that made you look like a dork, to smart watches. And I have to say, the Android Wear watches have convinced me that there is some potency in the idea of wearing not just a heart rate monitor, but a notification engine on your wrist, something more powerful. Apple is aiming to do something even bigger with its Apple Watch. First of all, I think it's going to be expensive. They said the starting Apple Watch will start at $350, but there will be a stainless steel one we think will probably be 2 to 3 times more, might be as much as $1,000. And a solid gold watch, which experts say can't possibly sell for less than $5,000 or $6,000. What? I think this is Apple saying, you know, we see these as fashion accessories. This is kind of an interesting approach for Apple. On the face of it, Apple's software looked uninspiring, a little complex, a little too detailed, a little hard to use. But nobody's really used it, so we won't know until they actually come out with the Apple Watch. I suspect we'll be talking a lot about that. But I don't think the Apple Watch will be the instant winner that a lot of people are predicting. I think Android Wear is actually pretty good. Pebble has been struggling. They kind of created this category with a Kickstarter project a couple of years ago. But they're still in there. Sony has a number of different kinds of smartwatches. So does Samsung. But I think it may come down to, just as it has in the smartphone market, Android versus Apple. And this will be a very interesting year for wearables. I've yet to see something significant, something you have to have, but perhaps that'll happen. What else will we see? As I mentioned earlier, I don't think we're going to see big leaps forward in smartphone technologies. I would like to see improvements in batteries. Lollipop, Android 5.0, will be presumably this year replaced by Android 6.0, Android Marshmallow, Milkshake. I don't know what dessert they'll choose for Android M. Probably fall of next year. 5 was such a big leap for Android. I'm not sure if they'll make the big leap with 6. We'll see. How about tablets? I'm a little off the reservation on this one. I think tablets are dead or dying. I know you love your iPad. So many do. Kids love iPads. But I think the advent of bigger smartphones like the iPhone 6 Plus, the Note 4, giant screen phones, I think make the tablet less important. All along, the tablet was kind of in a weird middle spot, somewhere between your smartphone and your laptop. And as the smartphone becomes more powerful and the screens become larger, I don't know if there is a middle spot anymore. I am beginning to think the tablet market will dry up in 2015. This is one of those predictions where I could very easily be wrong. And I certainly have been wrong before. But I think maybe what will happen is a smartphone will move up into that middle position, and the wearables like the Apple Watch or the Android Wear Watch will become the kind of the small one. So watch, phone, computer. I know there are people who disagree. That'll be an interesting one. That'll be one maybe we should take a bet on. What will happen to the tablet? I wonder, in fact, whether Microsoft will get out of the phone business entirely. They've had such trouble with Windows Phone. They spent so much money on Nokia. I think Windows 10 will be a success, but I wonder if there's much future in Windows Phone. It's just such a small part of the market. Will 2015 be the year BlackBerry finally calls it quits? Wouldn't be surprised. They've been struggling. They've released, of course, the Passport, a square phone, a Pop-Tart-shaped smartphone with a full-size keyboard, to resounding yawns. And now they've gone back kind of to a classic phone, right down to the little thumb doohickey, very much like the last BlackBerry phones before the iPhone came out. I just don't think that's going to be enough. And I'm not rooting against BlackBerry. I'm a big fan. It was my last smartphone before the iPhone came out, but I just think that they didn't change fast enough with the times, and 2015 might be the year that BlackBerry finally calls it quits. They would have in 2014, but they couldn't find anybody to buy them. Yahoo will be an interesting company in 2015 as well. Yahoo's been really struggling. Remember, they hired Marissa Meyer away from Google to run the company, and I think Marissa Meyer had a honeymoon period of a couple of years, but now investors are starting to realize that Yahoo's losses have just broadened. They haven't been able to turn the corner. They haven't become the technology company that people thought it would become under Meyer, and I have a feeling this might be a tough year for Yahoo. A lot of activist investors are saying Yahoo should sell itself to AOL, should split itself up, or should just call it quits. This probably will be the year Yahoo gets acquired in 2015. What are your predictions for 2015? F and Dunn says, the medical tricorder. How about 2025? Do I hear 2030? Let's talk high tech. I've got the phones lit up. We got all our callers lined up. Our last show of the year, our last hour of the last show of the year, and I am so glad you're here. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're going to the phones right after this. Francine in Gloucester Township. Every time I hear that, Francine, I want to talk like the Gorton from Gloucester fisherman. Yeah?
Okay.
I won't do that, though. That would be rude. Hi, Francine.
Not the same thing. It's a different part of the country.
Where is Gloucester Township?
Gloucester Township's at the top of the Atlantic City Expressway.
Oh, all right.
Camden County, New Jersey.
So you're in New Jersey. Okay.
Yes.
But you still pronounce it Gloucester.
Yeah.
Okay.
Gloucester.
Gloucester Township. Francine, what can I do for you?
I have a very simple question for you. It's hard for me to find the answer. But first, I want to say Happy New Year to everyone at TWIT.
Thank you.
Second, I want to say I love TiVo. I've had it since 2003, before Comcast even made their H.
I know. TiVo. I had a TiVo. I got the first TiVo, as you heard, maybe.
Yes.
I wrote a book on it. I'm a big fan.
I bought the book.
Did you?
Yeah, but
awesome.
I was too scared to.
It was mostly for hacking your Series 1 TiVo. Immediately after that book came out, TiVo and the television industry said, we better encrypt these signals and made them unhackable.
Yeah. I don't have the one you have now, but I have the one previous, and I just love it.
It's great.
So it's so simple. It's so easy.
Yeah.
It's no-brainer.
I agree.
I don't even take it away. I don't want their DVR. It's horrible.
Take the whole company away.
I love that.
It's unbelievable that an American company that has actual customers could treat its customers so poorly.
Okay, this is not what I called about, but unfortunately my husband got laid off because the company closed, and so we called Comcast and we downgraded our services, and we got a price, okay, fine, and then the next time we got the bill, it was $70 more than what it was supposed to be. I mean, it's crazy.
They're horrible. And the only reason they can act so poorly is because they're a monopoly.
I know. And so my husband called, and thank goodness he got somebody who knew what they were doing. They said, you're right. We'll fix it. They fixed it for 1 month. The next month, it was up $50. So now we have to make another phone call. It's like, because of the cable cords, of the TiVo. It's just crazy.
And by the way, they make those calls as painful as they can.
Well,
I don't think they want you to call them.
I agree. But my husband locked out with this one guy. But after that, it's like, why do we have to call them every 3 months? The bill. It's so frustrating. But here's why I called.
Okay.
I can't find the answer. I'm positive you know it. I have an Android. My husband has an iPhone. I have some Facebook accounts under fake names. They're not my name. I like to play games. Okay? So if I upload a picture, I don't want the picture to have the location. How do you turn off the location of pictures?
So in your phone, you can turn it off in the camera. There's a setting in all Android cameras. There's a setting that says don't record location, but that will do it for every picture you take.
Good. That's fine.
Okay.
I'm a private person.
You don't want. Yeah. And you're right. And this is something people should be very aware of. if that is turned on, it's embedded in the image. And then when you upload that image to Facebook or somewhere else, unless you explicitly turn it off, and it, you can, but it's still
where
in the,
is it?
Well, it's in, hidden away in the settings, but it's still in the image. So I think the most prudent thing, if you really don't want your location published, is to turn off geolocation in the camera. Then it won't be recorded in the image, and no one will know it.
Can you tell me where that is?
Yeah, it's in the camera settings.
Okay.
Yeah, which Android phone do you have?
S4, Galaxy
okay.
S4.
Yeah, just go into the camera, go into the settings, and there will be, you know, gosh, Samsung puts a lot of settings. I don't blame you for being a little bewildered. But there is a setting in there, and it may not be, you don't have to kind of think about it, but you want to turn off geolocation, and that is, every Android camera has that. On the iPhone, it's even easier because the iPhone, Apple knows that this is a privacy issue, and Apple makes it very clear, and you can disable location features in the camera easily.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
You're welcome, and I don't blame you for doing that. And I think you've actually told people something they may not know, and I bet you there's a few people scrambling right now because you are.
I think so, too.
Yeah, you are posting often location information, and it's GPS, so it's within 3 meters. It's where you live in some cases, and you may not want to post that on the Internet.
I don't have a picture of me on the Internet, and that is my goal till I die. That's my plan. Anyway, happy.
Don't you feel sorry for the younger generation? Because that can't be their goal. They can't. It's not an option, right? Good luck.
Yes, I do.
Good luck. All right. Hey, nice to talk to you. Happy New Year in Gloucester Township. I appreciate the call, Francine. And I also appreciate the sentiments. I think a lot of people don't want to be public on the Internet. And you nowadays have to jump through hoops to do it. Paul, Lake Forest, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Paul.
Hey, Leo. First thing I wanted to say was I was there last year at the New Year's Eve.
You were?
Yes.
Did you have fun?
Well, I walked in, sat down, and I didn't realize I sat down right under the balloons.
I remember you. We dropped the balloons on your head.
Yep. That was my moment of fame.
I remember that.
It
was on TV. I think we might have pulled it up and done it again. It was so much fun.
Yeah.
Paul, I'm so glad you were here for that. It was fun, wasn't it?
It was. I do remember, though, that at the time you were saying never again.
Yeah,
never
I'll
again.
Probably say that again this year, but you know how it is.
Yeah, I mentioned to my sister, she said, it must be a lot like childbirth.
Exactly. You forget. The next day you go, oh, it was so fun. It's painful. Working on the air for 24 hours is work, but you know what? Maybe, again, I think it is like childbirth. I've forgotten. But it seems like, in retrospect, it's worth it. We'll see. Ask me in hour number 23 on Wednesday. What can I do for you here?
Okay. What I want to do is what you can do with one of those neat scanners.
Yeah.
But I don't want to buy a new scanner to do it.
Oh, uh-huh. Which thing do you want to do that you like so much?
Just be able to scan documents and file them.
Yeah.
Easily.
That's a software function, frankly.
Yeah.
So if you go out and you get the Fuji Snap Scan or, you know, there's several companies that make these. I've forgotten the names of all of them. But the idea is you put in the scanner and the software goes zzz, and it takes any receipt and it automatically categorizes it and so forth. And that's just really the software. Any scanner can do that.
Right.
So Evernote is a good free choice.
Oh, I have Evernote.
Yeah, scan to Evernote is often the best choice because Evernote will often categorize stuff automatically.
Okay.
So now, there's that the one, what is the name of that? I'm looking. I have one over here. Neat Receipts. I think they sell the Neat. I have the Neat Scanner. And, the scanner is expensive. But I think they might sell the software standalone. And it would work with pretty much any.
Okay.
Any. The Neat software. You're on Windows?
Well, I'm on a Windows, and I have a Mac, so.
All right. I don't know if they have it for the Mac, but they do for Windows. You can buy the software and use it with any scanner, and it will do exactly what the Neat Receipt Scanner does. The key is all in the software recognizing what the thing is, if it's a receipt or a document or whatever, and it will automatically categorize it. I think Evernote's the first one to start with, if I were you.
Well, that makes it easy.
It's free. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. The last hour of the last show of 2014. It's completely meaningless because I'll be here next week. We'll do it all over again. It's just, it's like an odometer. It's just going to turn over whether you like it or not. But I do hope you have a great New Year's Eve. And I do, I want to take a little moment to invite you to our event. We're going to do a little party on my podcast network. No radio station would let me take over their frequency for 24 hours. So, you know, maybe in a few years I'll be able to convince them to do that. But we're going to do it on the internet this year. From 3 a.m. Pacific time, New Year's Day, this coming Wednesday, to 3 a.m. Pacific time, New Year's Eve, to 3 a.m. Pacific time, New Year's Day, this Thursday, for 24 hours, we're going to have a marathon. I'd call it a telethon. We need a new name because it's not on TV. It's an internet-a-thon. And it'll be for a good cause, for UNICEF. We're going to have lots of entertainment, lots of fun. But the real point of it is to say Happy New Year 27 different times. We'll start with New Year's at midnight, New Year's Day in New Zealand. That's the first place in the world that will go into 2015. That's 3 a.m. Pacific, 6 a.m. Eastern on New Year's Eve. And we'll go all the way to, I think it's the Sandwich Islands, American Samoa, somewhere in the Pacific, 3 a.m. New Year's Day, the last part of the world, right at the dateline there, I guess, to enter 2015. And each hour, in some cases, every half hour, every 15 minutes, we're going to say, Happy New Year! Are we doing a balloon drop this year? Last year, we had a balloon drop every hour. And it was kind of funky because we had to reset it each time. So we attached all the balloons together as a clump. The clump came down, and then we would haul it back up by a rope for the next one. We got a better way this year? All right. This year, I stepped aside and let my team plan the whole thing. And they've got apparently many surprises, some of which I've been told, don't get mad. So that worries me a little bit. Don't get mad, Leo. We're not going to tell you right now, but don't get mad.
Just a little?
I said, is there...
Just a little?
Am I going to get wet? Will there be open flame involved? Where exactly, what kind of mad? We'll find out. We're taking over the street out front of our Tech Guy Lab studios. We're going to have a mechanical bull. I do believe that will be one of the things that will make me mad. We're going to have a bounce house. I don't know what they're going to do with that. We paid the city for a permit to take over the street.
You're just telling me this now?
I hope you're coming.
Wow. A bouncy house.
A bounce really house. How can you turn that down?
Adult bouncy house.
There'll be champagne every hour, at least. 27 bottles of champagne. And that's going to be a lot of fun. You know why we're doing this? Because 2 years ago, I watched Rockin' New Year's Eve.
With Seacrest.
And then I also watched CNN with Kathy Griffin and what's his name? The guy with the white. Anderson Cooper. And it was fun. It was good. But at 9 o'clock, the ball drops in Manhattan. We're in California at 9 o'clock in the evening. And then it's over. It's like, it's 9 p.m. I don't want to go to bed now. So I decided, look, the podcast, at least, the internet stuff is global. You've heard calls. We've had calls from all over the world. It's global. So we're going to do a global New Year's Eve party. And you're all invited to watch. It's at live, L-I-V-E, dot, TWIT, T-W-I-T. That's the name of the podcast network. It stands for This Week in Tech, okay? It's an unfortunate acronym, I understand. Live.twit.tv, not .com. Live.twit.tv. If you go to Tech Guy Labs, we'll have a link there. And we can watch and we'll have fun. And I'll be wearing a tuxedo. We'll have a tote board. Every hour, we'll go to the tote board. We'll see how much money we've raised for UNICEF, which will be fun. At the end, I'll sing You'll Never Walk Alone. I'll get all weepy. I'll start saying, this gal, Heather Hammond, she is a great humanitarian, ladies and gentlemen. That kind of thing. Should be fun. So if you've not got other plans, and even if you're going out New Year's Eve, this is going to start like New Year's Eve morning, so you should be able to join us then. Please stop by. All right, on we go with the calls. John's next in Hesperia, California. Hi, John. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling. What can I do for you?
I've got new technology, the Apple iPad. I want to figure out what's the best way to play music from output from the iPad to older stereo equipment, a preamp, which is preamping audio signals to an amplifier and big, gorgeous speakers. I'm one of those kind of guys.
But yeah, anyway, I'm jealous. That's the way to go.
I've got, I know I can do the audio out with the earphone connection.
Yeah, but that's...
Is it also possible to use the bottom connection?
Yeah. So the earphone connection means you're going to do the digit... So the music's stored on the iPad digitally, ones and zeros. And you're going to do, you know, the speakers, the preamp, they need an analog signal, you know, a sine wave. So at some point, the ones and zeros have to be converted from digital to analog, from ones and zeros to sine wave. You can either do it inside the iPad, and that's what happens when you take the audio jack out. That's going to be an analog signal that's suitable for your preamp. But that means the digital to analog conversion is done by the iPad. Not necessarily a bad thing to do. But if it's possible to buy higher quality DACs, digital to analog converters, and those higher quality DACs, you know, arguably do a better job. I don't know if it's going to make a huge difference. If you can take the digital audio out of the Lightning port at the bottom, do you have a Lightning or a 30-pin connector?
It's the original iPad.
Ah, all right. The 30-pin connector is a little bit easier, actually. Apple used to make a dock that you'd put the 30-pin into, and it would convert it there. There are companies that make 30-pin iOS output into analog. They have standalone DACs. But in my opinion, you know, you're probably playing back MP3s, right?
I'm actually getting some...
Or AACs?
Interesting old YouTube videos from days from San Francisco.
Oh, fun.
Bill Graham days.
Well, do you want to see the video, too?
Yeah, I can watch the video on the iPad and listen to the music.
Ah, good idea. So that would be another way to do it is, say, get a an Apple TV, hook that up to your TV and your stereo, and you could AirPlay from the iPad to the Apple TV. Then your big screen TV would have the video, and the music would come out of your speakers. That's another way to do it. I think you should try the analog jack out. You know, sometimes there's a little noise. Maybe if you don't get a good connection. But generally, I think the DAC in the iPad is good enough. Especially for what you're doing. These recordings are not audiophile quality, especially because YouTube compresses the heck out of them. So I think that that's going to be more than adequate. I wouldn't buy any additional hardware. Just take it out of the audio jack.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. I mean, you can get fancier if you really want to. The next step up certainly would be getting an Apple TV. That's $99. The digital to analog conversion will happen then in the television or the receiver, and in both cases they might be better, because the way Apple TV works is you're going to use Wi-Fi to send the audio and video from your iPad over AirPlay. That's the technology. It's actually a standard technology. Apple's rebranded over AirPlay to the Apple TV. That's still going to be bits. The Apple TV is then going to send it out over the HDMI port. That means it's still bits. It's still digital to your AV receiver. If your amp happens to have HDMI inputs, this is probably a good way to go. My home theater system, for instance, that's exactly how I do it. I have an Onkyo AV receiver, which has HDMI ports. The Apple TV goes into that. It splits the audio and the video, sends the video to the TV via HDMI, and the audio does the analog to digital conversion inside the amp, and then the audio goes out to the speakers. And that actually works quite well. So really, that's the question, is where you want that A to D conversion to happen. Hey, I appreciate the call, and enjoy those old Bill Graham videos. Isn't YouTube great? Nothing dies thanks to YouTube. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This is the last segment of 2014 as we head into the new year on Wednesday. I'll be back next week. Don't worry. I don't skip a day. I feel you. I am needed. I have a job to do. No vacation for me. Anne in Lake Forest, California, you're next. Hi, Anne. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, you have me laughing at that. Thanks, Leo.
I'm like a superhero. I have a job to do.
Yeah, and by the way, I may be from Lake Forest, but I don't know Paul. So.
Oh, all right. Well, there you go.
I'm a long-time listener, first-time caller. I'm a Mac girl. I first started using them in 1990.
Wow.
Yeah. From MS-DOS to Mac.
Good. A smart move at the time.
Yes, yes. And I have I've had an iPad for, you know, about a year and a half, and I finally got an iPhone.
Oh, you are all Apple.
Yes. Well, I might as well. I mean, it's...
You know, Apple makes that very desirable because...
Yes, they really do.
They build an ecosystem, and it just everything works together. That's their goal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and that's... They got me that way, so... You know,
nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. Well, so I want to create ringtones with music that you can't find on iTunes.
Yes.
And... I've never done this, so I want to, I guess, rip, you know, I have an external CD drive, so I can put the music into my Mac.
Yeah, the first thing, of course, is to rip it into the Mac, so it's now in iTunes.
Right.
Unfortunately,
mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, Apple used to make this really easy. You could do it in iTunes. There actually was a ringtone maker built into iTunes that would allow you to select the portion of the song with little sliders and mm-hmm. turn it into a ringtone. And I think they took that out.
Yeah.
In Yosemite, unfortunately.
Yeah, they and of course I upgraded. And there are instructions on your website, which by the way is a great resource for people, you know, listening in or on the phone, you know, it's really a
thank you.
Smart to go there and you know, I did a search and there were a couple things for Android and there was some information on, you know, on Macs and iPhones, but it wasn't complete, so that's why
all of it's dated and it even might be dated on our site because this was an easy thing to do on Apple.
Yeah, your thing was dating back to like 2006.
Oh, I've been doing this show since 1991.
Oh, yeah. Well, I listened to you on KGO when I lived
that's
in
right.
the area.
So I used to tell people how to use System 7 to make a ringtone. Actually, we didn't have a way to do ringtones then. But unfortunately, I don't know. I think you can still do it on GarageBand. Is that right? Let me ask the chat room. You can't do it on iTunes anymore. It used to be you would just name it with the ringtone extension.
Mm-hmm.
Which I can't remember. Was it M4R? I think it was.
I have GarageBand, although I've never used it.
Yeah, I think you can do it in GarageBand still. So let me ask the chat room because I haven't done it in a while. And it is sad because it used to be a very easy thing to do in iTunes and they took that out. So
Yes, I know. I'm very frustrated.
Yeah. Yeah, let me see. I guess
I think it's been gone for a while. I think it might have been.
Maybe it was with Mavericks, yeah.
Yes, I think it was
yeah.
Mavericks. Because other people have said they...
Yeah, Macworld has an article which will put in those fabulous show notes you mm-hmm. love so very much. It's in their Mac 101 column. Now, let me check the date because...
Yeah,
it's from January of this year.
Okay.
Chris Breen, my buddy and 911 Mac 911 guy... says you can still do it in GarageBand. So I don't think they've taken that out. The good news is GarageBand comes with every Mac, so you should have that capability.
Yeah.
It's kind of a pain, but once you've created the M4R, the good news is iTunes will continue to recognize it, even the modern iTunes will continue to recognize it as a ringtone and copy it. They did, in fact, screw that up with iOS 8.1. They fixed that now with 8.1.2.
Oh,
it was deleting.
Mm-hmm.
It was deleted.
Yeah, I read something about that on show notes, too, yeah.
Yeah. So good news. You still can do it. And it's my favorite way to do it. And I certainly do it on Android all the time. I don't want those stock marimba.
God, they're horrible. I'm a musician, so.
Oh, well, you know.
Yeah.
And I think one of the reasons they stopped doing it is because it's such a lucrative practice for the phone carriers to sell you these ringtones. Wait a minute. Now, apparently you can still do it in iTunes 12. So I'm looking at the way to do it. This is a link from Techie Sky. I've never heard of them, but we'll put this link as well. It does look like I don't know. I'm going to have to try this because last time I tried to do it with iTunes 12, it didn't work. So try GarageBand, try iTunes 12, and thank you for calling, and Happy New Year.
Well, same to you, Leo. A pleasure to speak with you.
My pleasure. Take care. John, how much time do I have left for Carl in Riverside? Do I have a couple of minutes here? 3 minutes. All right, Carl. You're on notice. 3 minutes till the end of my year. What can I do for you, Carl?
Hey, Happy New Year, Leo.
Happy New Year. Thank you.
So I bought myself and the Motorola 360 and the Nexus 6 for Christmas.
Nice.
And I love it. I loved it.
Moto 360 is their smartwatch. It's, as far as I'm concerned, the best smartwatch out there to date.
It is.
I love it.
I love it, too. But recently, some reason, you know how when you bring your wrist up, it's supposed to turn on and tell you the time?
Yeah.
Yeah, but mine doesn't do that anymore. It just has a little icon. On
I know.
it's like,
okay.
What's happening?
So one of the things all of these smartwatches have the same problem, which is if they were to leave the display on all the time, the battery would die fast, right? So there's a couple of things you can do. The Moto 360, especially if you've updated it, has good enough battery life to get through the day, even with ambient display on. So the first thing I do is turn on ambient display. You'll find that's in the settings. And it warns you the minute you say, I want the ambient display to be on, it'll say, you know, this is going to kill your battery. You say, okay, let that happen, okay? The other thing you can do, and I would recommend, and by the way, I leave my ambient screen on and I get through the day, no problem. The other thing that you could do is some of the third-party watch faces, and the Moto Connect app might do this too, will allow you to turn up the amount of time the watch stays awake. Now, if your watch is not the watch is supposed to recognize the tilt up of the wrist. So ambient display means even when your wrist isn't turned up, there'll be kind of a dim version of the display with just the hands. And then when you tilt your wrist up, it's supposed to turn to a bright version. If it's not recognizing that wrist tilt, and I've seen that too, then I would reset the watch. I've reset the watch a couple of times to fix that, and it does seem to fix it. So it's like the watch gets confused. And resetting, it's not a big deal. If you've got your attached phone nearby, it'll copy all the stuff over and so forth. I've been trying different faces, and some of the third-party faces have features, as I said, to keep the display on and stuff. And so just experiment.
What faces do you use?
I'm using, this one is called SkyMaster, which I really like, and that's, I think, 99 cents in the store. And then the one I would recommend everybody get is called Intellicon Watch Face. And it allows you to design your own face. They have a variety of built-in faces. They also have a library of faces designed by other folks. So you could choose a face you like. And it has that feature to keep the display on a little longer, which I like. So that's the one I would recommend.
Awesome.
Carl, it's great to talk to you. What else? You said you got a Moto 360 and a Nexus 9?
Six.
Nice. That's my...
Yeah, but I already cracked it.
What?
Yeah, I know.
Dude.
So
that's got to break your heart, doesn't it?
Yeah, so I got to get a replacement by Motorola.
Oh, but they did replace it.
They're going to replace it.
For free?
I don't think so.
Oh. Hey, Happy New Year, everybody. Thank you so much. Happy New Year, Heather, Nathan. Love you guys. Love working with you. Can't wait to see you in 2015, like a week from now. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great geek week. We'll see you in 2015. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.